Welcome to Crime Corner, where we examine all things crime, whether it be on the page, on the screen, on the street, or in the courtroom. I'm Matt Coyle, author of the Rick Cahill Crime Series, and I'll be your host for as long as it takes. My guest tonight, or today here on the West Coast, R.G. Belsky is an author of crime fiction and a journalist in New York City. He has a degree in journalism from Ohio University and has been an illustrious career in both print and television news. He's a former vice president at NBC Local Digital News, managing editor at the New York Times Daily News, editor of Star Magazine, and metropolitan editor of the New York Post. Wow, that's a lot. Most recently, he was a managing editor for NBC News. I think it's NBC News Digital, but I didn't say that here. His crime novels reflect his extensive media background in newspapers, magazines, and digital TV news. Beyond the Headlines is the fourth novel in the Claire Carlson series, following yesterday's news, Below the Fold, and The Last Scoop. Dick lives in New York City. Welcome, Dick, or R.G. Belsky.
Hey, Matt, and that always sounds more impressive when you string it all together like that, all the jobs, you know. But
it's very impressive, actually.
I'm not sure it was all that exciting when you were doing them, but so I spent most of my career, most of my life, as a journalist in New York City, and writing mystery novels too.
Let me just came to me as we were as I was giving your intro. So, why do you go by R.G. Belsky as opposed to Dick? How everybody knows you.
I know you're going to find this hard to believe, Matt, in being the business, but it was a marketing decision by publishers that said that we think it would be better for you to be R.G. than Dick Belsky. I have no idea why. It actually took place back in the 90s, and I had a woman character, and I think maybe they wanted to leave it open. It was nobody could tell. And then they put my picture on the cover, so that kind of gave that away, you know. And then I did another series of books before, both you and I obviously work for the same publishing house now, Ocean View, but I did a series of books before them for Atria, which is Simon & Schuster. And I said, well, you know, I've been called Dick Belsky, Richard Belsky on a few books, and R.G. Belsky, I prefer to, you know, go back to Dick Belsky. And they came back and they said, we like R.G. Belsky better. So, you know, again, it's like, I don't really know what the reasoning is. And so by the time I got to, the current series, Claire Carlson, I just, okay, I'm R.G. Belsky, and that's what I am. But as a journalist, if you want to look me up ever as a journalist or Google me, it's Dick Belsky. So to avoid the confusion.
Well, the name situation has kind of come full circle, and R.G. makes sense if you're trying to be nebulous in your gender, because you're writing about a female character, Claire Carlson. So tell us a bit about her and Beyond the Headlines.
Yeah, Claire Carlson is a TV journalist in New York City, and she is a news director of a television station. And I've never actually worked purely at a television station. I worked at NBC, but I worked in digital, and I worked in newspapers, I worked in magazines. But I kind of use all my experience in newsrooms to talk about what her life is like running a newsroom. Now, the one issue with Claire that I run into in each book, and I don't know if you've ever had something like this in your series, Matt, but the first book I ever wrote was supposed to be a standalone. It was very much involving a woman. It involved the main character would involve a baby she had had years earlier, and I named that character Claire Carlson, and I wrote a book, and it was supposed to be a standalone book, which obviously had to be a woman, and I made her the news director of this station. And then fortunately, it went well, and they wanted more, and they were like, well, you know, we want to do a series. So now I have the series where the news director has to go out and cover stories, which really doesn't make any sense, because the news director would be sitting in an office doing budgeting reports and everything. So each book has to come up with a reason why the news director is out there doing that. And again, if I had thought of this as a series, I don't know when you started doing Rick Cahill, if you were like, oh, this is going to be a series. I've done like three series in my career, and I never started any of them out as a series. They were, oh, this is just a book. And, so sometimes you get yourself into a situation, but it's been fun. So I kind of write her a little bit like, it's a little like a McMillan and wife used to be, you know, where he was the police commissioner, but he's still out solving crimes, because otherwise it would be kind of boring.
Right. Well, I think that you, particularly in this book and the other books I've read, you handle it deftly how she gets out out on the street, out on the beat, more or less. So it's well done.
Well, one thing I would like to say about this, Matt, and I don't think it's quite is the same with A Private Eye like you write about. And by the way, I've read pretty much all the Riccio books too, so I'm a fan, and I'm still amazed by Blind Vigil, which kind of blew me away. Like how you can write about a blind detective and pull it off. But you know, one of the things about with Claire, people always say to me like, well, you know, you really write. Like, this is realistic. This is what a newsroom is really like. And to a degree it is, but it also isn't, because, you know, it's like in my entire career in journalism, I have never personally known anyone. I've never heard of any journalist who ever solved a murder on their own, ever. You know, I mean, the police solved them.
Same with a PI.
But Claire solves a murder every book. At least that's suspension of disbelief. It's, you know, the same way where, you know, 500 people or whatever have been murdered in this little town in Cabot Cove, which only has 1,000 people. You know, it's like you have to take these, you have to take those kind of liberties. So she's out solving murders. Even though she's the news director.
Well, may we all hope for the longevity of What's-Her-Face and Cabot Cove. I mean, I don't know how many seasons that television series went, but
the books are still being written. You know, sure, Donald Bain wrote them a long time, and then John Land, I believe, took over. I think somebody, you know, people are dying there all the time in this little town, and Jessica is solving the murders. You know, there's a whole side thing on the internet which I looked up one day on this is like where my mind goes, that Jessica really is a serial killer and she's the one committing all the murders, but we're getting off topic here.
I've heard that too, and actually that is probably more interesting. So as discussed, you have a wealth of experience in the news business. When you started writing, I sort of talked about this, but not exactly. Mm-hmm. When you started writing Claire 4 books ago, why did you choose a female protagonist? Of course, as you said, you didn't know that it was become a series, but
yeah.
Why for that particular book?
Right. I mean, in general, I think I've written, and you lose track at some point of the numbers because there was a novella thrown in, but I probably have written about 10 or 16 published books so far. And I think the majority of them have actually, some of them have had male protagonists. I wrote a series with a male protagonist before this, four books. But I've always liked writing the woman character because I just think you can kind of do more with a female character. She's up against more obstacles. When I started writing many years ago, I wrote I read Raymond Chandler and I was like, oh, I'm going to write a newspaper guy like Philip Marlowe. And I had a guy reporter who was doing this stuff, and a woman. Read a friend of mine who was also in the publishing business read the book, and she said, you know, it's pretty good, you know, but you know, what if you made the reporter a woman? You know, wouldn't that be interesting? And I switched it, and it sort of, the book just sort of came alive for me that way. Like, you could do more stuff with it. And I have met so many interesting women journalists in my life and worked with them, and so there's a wealth of things like that to draw on. So I don't necessarily, and certainly with Claire, I didn't necessarily think it out. But I do enjoy writing her as a woman character. And obviously there's things you have to be careful with. You have to, you know, things like you want somebody to look at it to make sure, like things, obviously fashion, things like that. But just other issues as well. Somebody will say, well, no, a woman wouldn't say or do that. And but in general, I've gotten an awful lot of female fans, you know, who say, wow, I love the way you write a woman, which to me is, you know, is high praise.
Indeed. I write in male protagonists, but there are times when I have to describe like what people are wearing, and fashion is the hardest, especially for women.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
It's tough,
but and you know, I guess I get most of my inspiration probably from some of the same people you do. I mean, you know, Philip Marlowe. I mean, I loved Ross McDonald before that.
Yeah,
but I also read a lot of other stuff. When I started writing, I read all the Agatha Christies. You know, I just got into that. I read Mary Higgins Clark, and then, you know, I became a big fan of who might be the best female character I've ever, you know, read is Kinsey Malone by the late Sue Grafton.
Yeah.
And, And, you know, so a lot of that. But then, you know, I also, like, I'm a huge Michael Conley fan, and as you probably know, I've read every one of his books. So, you know, there's some of the Bosch stuff that you want to draw, and I'm sure you're probably the same way. People say, where does your characters come from? But to me, they're drawn from just a lot of elements of my life. And I try and do a character, this is true of Claire, and that's probably true of Rick Cahill, too, I suppose. I kind of do the kind of character I would like to read about, because I just feel if I do that, then hopefully other people will want to read about it, too.
Right. Well, because if you're not writing about what's interesting to you, then it's just not going to be interesting to the reader either. It's going to come across in the writing. I'll say this. You said you've had people tell you that she wouldn't say or do that. But
right.
You actually took it to the third degree because you're writing first person in her head. So you're in her thoughts as well. So that's very courageous.
Well, yeah. And that's not a well-thought-out thing either. People say to me, every one of my books has been written in the first person that have been published. And people say, well, you've never written a book in the third person. That's not true. I've written a number of books with multi-viewpoint and third person. They just never have gotten published. So
in the drawer,
I find when I read a book, I generally prefer the first person and in the character. And when I'm writing, I just feel, because character is so important to me character is more important than the plot even.
First
person is the way to go. It was funny. We talked about this a few years ago when I was on his show, and you actually had one of your fans who was pretty cool because they corrected me and they were right. And I read the book. I couldn't believe it. But it's like when you read the Michael Conley Bosch books, I mean, I always think those should have, I'm going to say those should have been, you would have thought he would have written them in the first person because he's basically writing, certainly the early ones are like the classic PI. But it's not. They're all in the third person except one, which he did in the first person. I'm not sure why.
It was the PI novel he wrote. He wrote the one PI novel when Bosch retired and then ended up coming back to Force. Yeah.
And I don't know if I told you this at the time, but back in the 90s, when I started reading him, I wound up having a drink at a bar with Michael Conley. And I was fascinated by this idea of why he wrote in the third person. Because to me, Bosch is it's like Philip Marlowe. He's first person, you know, it should be I. And I said to him, like, so why did you write in the third person? You know, and I thought I was going to get this incredibly well thought out. And, you know, as you know, he's like a really, really interesting, cool guy. And why did you write him in the first and the third? And he went, in the third person, not the first person. He's like, I don't know. I didn't really think about it. It just seemed like the way to do it. Which I thought was the perfect answer for a writer. It felt right for him, you know.
So. Right. And you certainly do feel like you're in his head. So it's extremely close. Third person.
Yeah. You know what I find, the only thing that I find annoying, because, you know, you read a lot of multi-viewpoint different books, and you know the Jack Reacher books, another example, he writes some of them in third person, some of them in the, you know, Lee Child has written some of them in the first person. The only one that bothers me sometimes is when you'll be reading in one form and then suddenly they'll switch to another form. It'll kind of jar you, you know. It's like, as long as I know what I'm getting in a book, I'm generally happy with it.
Right. So Beyond the Headlines begins with a simple, seemingly simple murder mystery, then spirals into something much bigger and even goes all the way back to the Vietnam War.
I actually was there in the Vietnam War.
Well, that's what I found out in reading the book. And so, but my question was, I mean, because, you know, we're all old, but that was a long time ago. So I'm wondering why you chose to address the Vietnam War in this book. All these years later.
Well, let me just say quickly about the book, because I don't want people to think the book is about Vietnam, because Vietnam is part of the book, but it's a small part.
Right.
The book is basically the book was, to some degree, if you had to look for an inspiration, it was from me covering the O.J. Simpson case or being involved in that during the 90s, which was the most famous celebrity crime, obviously, of our time. I just thought this idea of combining murder with celebrity, a big-time celebrity who gets arrested. And my character, the woman who is arrested, is a woman named Lori Bateman. And she actually was born in Vietnam but then came here, becomes like a – and she becomes famous. And I describe her as being famous for being famous, sort of like a Kim Kardashian. Like, she's not like a big movie star. She's not like a – she's a model. She does a lot of things. But everybody knows her. And then she marries this billionaire rich guy, and they become, you know, A-list celebrities. And then he's gone murdered. She's accused of the murder. And that's when it, and that's really what where Claire gets in, and Claire begins like thinking she's innocent. She also finds out that the marriage had been a like very unpleasant marriage. There'd been abuse and things, and she has a lot of sympathy for this woman. And then she starts following the evidence, and then she becomes she's not sure. She doesn't know whether this woman is a victim or really a cunning killer or whatever. And the country at the same time, because she's a celebrity, begins choosing sides, you know, very much like with OJ, you know, and a lot of it doesn't have to do with the evidence. It has to do with the person. And with OJ, the issue was race. And in this book, I deal with the issue of, you know, women's rights and Me Too. And this woman, you know, using that as a and one of the reasons, you know, why, like, I didn't kill him, but if I did kill him, you know, he should have died because, you know, he was this guy that was doing all this stuff to women. So, you know, I try and draw on a lot of that in the main plot. But then, as you point out, the victim, it turns out, was in Vietnam in the late 60s. And so I came up with this idea of, well, like, you know, if I could get some of the beginnings of the plot back that started 50 years ago, I could use some of my own background to write about it, and I did. So some of the stuff that with the victim is like he worked in an intelligence unit in the you know in Vietnam. Well, I worked in an intelligence unit in Vietnam, so I was able to draw on a little bit of my experience. And you know, I always point out people say thank you for your service. Well, I was drafted. I mean, I didn't really have any choice. But when I got out of Vietnam, I wanted to write a Vietnam novel. That was my goal, and I never did. Mm-hmm. I started a few times, and I was told, oh, nobody cares about Vietnam or whatever. And I probably will never write a Vietnam novel, but this is sort of the closest I've ever come because there's a whole B-plot in here involving Vietnam.
Well, regarding one thing you said, drafted or enlisted, you still served, so you should be thanked.
I did.
Yeah,
I did.
Right.
I did. And, the Army made me an offer I couldn't refuse, which was you either go to Vietnam or you go to Canada or you go to jail. And, you know, but it's one of those experiences that while it's going on, you wished you weren't doing it. But later on, you look back on it and you think, well, you know, that was, you know, as a writer, I'm sure you've gone through this a lot too. As a writer, like things like that, I think help you become a writer because you draw on a lot of things in your own past.
Yeah, I mean, I've never had that kind of past, but unquestionably, the bad things that happen in life, you later use them to, you know, put emotion in scenes. So we touched a little bit on celebrity. I mean, you know, you said the Kardashians. I was thinking Paris Hilton was kind of the
first. Well, that's the other one I use. I always
right,
say
but
when
I,
I've been doing the, I say Kim. Well, Paris Hilton was, you know, like from a few years ago, and then the Kardashians now.
Right.
But it's like, yeah, it's like, well, what are they? I mean, why are they famous?
Exactly.
And that's kind of what I wanted to create.
I think they're famous for sex tapes, but yeah, that was that we're now in this period where almost anybody can be famous with social media. You know, if you somehow do something interesting or stupid enough and get enough followers, I think it tends more towards stupid. That all you're famous too. And just wondering, do you think there's going to be a backlash to this, or is it going to, or are we just all going to have our not only 15 minutes of fame, but like an hour and a half before we die?
Well, I've seen it all happen over, you know, certainly just over the last 10 years or so. And I don't know that it's ever going to go away. I mean, the social media has become such a part of all of our lives now, and especially with kids and stuff, and they can't live without it. You know, look, there's good things about it. And, you know, I mean, I remember when you work in the newspaper, you didn't know something and you had to go to a library and look it up and all that kind of stuff. And now you click one thing on Google and you've got the information. You know, I think and I get into this a little bit in the book, you know, like the viral response to what my character Lori Bateman does. And yeah, there's this such emotion that it actually can you know, can overwhelm the evidence and people start reacting emotionally. And that's where my character Claire has to kind of put that aside and just actually look at the evidence. But, you know, one thing that comes up, and this has come up with the previous character I wrote, who was a newspaper reporter as well as Claire, in my books, I have to address all this because I can't, you know, I can't do the old-fashioned thing of, you know, somebody going to a payphone and calling somebody or looking it up in a phone book or anything. All my characters have to be able to use social media. They have to be able to, you know, do live streams. They have to be able to tweet stuff when they're on assignment and all this kind of stuff. And it gets a bit tricky because you can't get too technical about it because, number one, by the time your book comes out, some of that stuff will be, will be gone.
Antiquated, yeah.
But I mentioned Sue Grafton before, but I always thought she really played it the smartest. Was, you know, she set her books in the 80s, and so she was able to have Kinsey Malone not have cell phones, not have internet, right. You know, and things like that. And I don't know how much you deal with that, but when you're writing in present day, it's very hard to deal with that in a way that's not. You want to address it, but you also don't want it to come back and bite you and do something stupid, too.
Yeah, well, you mentioned Blind Vigil, and that one, there's a lot of technology that helps vision-impaired people. And
yeah.
I didn't get into that too much because I was concerned about messing it up and then having it, like you said, by the time the book comes out, not be relevant anymore. Just a quick aside about Sue Grafton, who you mentioned. You know, I had the chance to meet her at this MWA meeting, dinner one time, and what a
right.
wonderful, funny, down-to-earth
yep.
person, just a great person.
Yep. I met her once. I have a picture of her and me together at BoucherCon, I think the one in Long mm-hmm. Beach. And,
right.
And I always like amazed, like when I met her, because she's a tiny woman.
Yeah.
But, and you probably have dealt with this. When I started writing books, I would reach out to a lot of authors and ask them if they would give me author blurbs, and I would reach out to some famous people, and most of them would ignore you or they wouldn't respond and things like that. And I never actually got an author blurb from Sue Grafton, but I got to tell you, she couldn't have been nicer. I mean, every time I would ask her, she would send me this letter, this detailed note, and those days were letters, you know, telling me why and explaining and apologizing. And, and I heard her speak at a conference or two, and she was a pretty – I was shocked when she died because I had no idea even when I heard it. It's one of
yeah.
the mm-hmm. – one of shock. I think everybody that ever knew her. And it's for people that have read the books, If you haven't read it, you should read her nonfiction book too. What's it? It's called something. I'm trying to think of the name of it. She wrote a nonfiction book about her own life and how it turned into Kinsey Malone. It's pretty fascinating stuff.
Yeah, she was a fascinating lady. So, quick shift to craft. I was curious about obviously being a journalist. I imagine that takes a lot of organization. How was that? Aided you in writing novels?
Well, you know, the thing about, I think most, a lot of novelists have been journalists. I mean, Michael Conley is a perfect example.
Right.
And to me, the biggest thing is I know how to tell, being a journalist taught me how to tell a story, but I know how to tell a story and I know how to meet a deadline. So like when I'm always like, I got to have this, but I'm like, fine, whatever. You know, I'm not, oh, it's going to take me 8 years to write the novel or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So there is that. So I think it really helped in almost all ways. The one problem I got from it was that, as a journalist, you're taught to tell the story very quickly, and I was a tabloid journalist, which means I was supposed to tell it even more quickly. You're supposed to put all the main facts in the lead, and maybe the whole story will only be 12 inches long. So you know, that's how you learn to write. And when I started writing fiction, when I started writing novels, the one criticism that I would get from agents or editors were like, you know, hey, you've got to slow down. You know, like you're going from A to B to Z too fast, you know. And
larger
so
canvas.
I had to learn to stretch it out more because as a journalist, I always say, you know, in a newspaper story, you put all the facts in the first paragraph. You put all the facts in the first page of a mystery novel, you got no novel. So that it sounds – I mean, I know that sounds exaggerated, but there is an element to that. But I think in general we talk about Conley, and he's actually said – in fact, I interviewed him not long ago for, I think, The Big Thrill. And he basically has said that if he hadn't been a journalist, he probably would not have been the novelist he is today. That, journalism is a great training ground for – for writing novels.
Yeah, it works for both of you. So before we go, you appear on the Sons of Sam series on Netflix.
Ah, yeah.
How'd that come about?
Yeah, I sort of became an overnight celebrity for at least a few minutes, but it's just amazing. A while back, so I was the city editor of the New York Post back in the 70s when the Summer of Sam, I had just been named. I was very young, but I was there for all the Son of Sam murders and everything that went on and all the crazy media stuff that happened. And so when they were doing this series, it's called Sons of Sam, A Descent into Darkness, and it's a question of whether there were more Sons of Sam than just David Berkowitz.
Yeah.
And I said, no, I have no knowledge of that. And they said, well, we would like you to come talk about what it was like, you know, during that summer, you know, at the Post and all these other places. So I did this, I guess it was the fall of 2019, well before COVID, and then, you know, like forgot about it. And then everything got put on hold. And then it came out on May 5th, and I'd totally forgotten by that point what I even said or what I did, you know, and I was a little nervous, and I looked at it, and I said, oh, I seem to have a relatively small part. I don't know. Like, they quote me it several times in the first two episodes. And I mean, I was stunned. I just got this people I haven't talked to in 30 years. Like, oh, my God, I saw you on Netflix, you know. And it is amazing the impact that it has. I mean, not necessarily my performance, but just the fact that I'm on TV on this show making, you know, doing a few of the, what do you call them, talking heads or whatever, who give you a little background. And
right. It
culminated a few days ago when I walked into one of my restaurants near here and where I live, and I'm going to get a takeout, and I walked in, and like, the waitress is all standing behind the bar, stand up and start clapping and cheering. And like, you're famous. You're a star. And I don't know about you, Matt, in terms of your career, but I'm not really used to this kind of celebrity notoriety.
Oh, I get it all the time. Anytime I leave my house, I get
applauded. Yeah, I know you probably do, yeah. But anyway, so yeah, it's Sons of Sam. It's actually a pretty good series. I mean, I had a very small role in it, but I think that'll be the beginning and end of my TV career. But yeah, it's kind of cool to have done it.
Well, you come across well in it. You give a sense of the time, and I think it's a binge-worthy series. I mean, everybody's interested in serial killers, and this guy takes it.
Right.
Completely different
well,
point of view.
Only, and there's only four episodes, so it's you know, like, it's manageable. You know, you basically can sit down and watch it in pretty much one, is like a total of 4 hours. So you don't have to commit to a series or anything. And again, I didn't do it, but I thought it was very well done. And it actually raises some interesting questions about that I hadn't really been aware of stuff, you know, that was going on back then, which is apart from just Berkowitz and being caught, but just questions about other leads and, you know, whether or not there were other any kind of accomplices. So, but, you know, if you watch it, you'll see, make up your own mind, you know. It's a good mystery story, though, I'll tell you, you know. So.
Yeah, it's I tend to watch it. I tend to watch streaming stuff lying in bed with my tablet so I fall asleep. So I haven't made it through, which is good. I mean, that's the purpose. But I haven't made it through the whole series yet. But I did see your episodes. It was good. And I think it's definitely binge worthy.
I'm in the first two episodes. So if people want to only watch me, you can watch two.
Well, yeah.
You know.
I mean, that's all they can take. So one last question about
sure.
The future. So do you see a standalone in the near future or another series? Or are we going to write Claire for a while?
Well, I love, you know, Claire, I've got a fifth book coming out next, well, I'm writing it right now. Hopefully it'll come out. I think I'm like you in that, but when I'm in the book, you're like, oh, I'm never going to be able to do this, you know. But anyway, I have a fifth book that'll come out next year in 2022 with Claire, and I'm working on that now. I also write a series of thrillers, and I have a book coming out June for a place called Bookature, which is a British publisher, and they're written under the name of Dana Perry, P-E-R-R-Y. So I'm writing those at the same time that I'm writing with a female character, believe it or not, a female private eye, a female police officer rather. And so right now I'm kind of busy, Matt. You know, I don't know, but I'm always thinking of things. And like I said, all my series started off as standalone. So generally when I start a book, I'm thinking of that book. I'm not thinking about doing a series. But The good thing about a series, and you know this, well, the good and bad thing, because we've talked about this, because I interviewed you, too, for Blind Vigil, is that on the one hand, you've got the character, and so you don't have to come up with the character. But on the other hand, you've got to keep the character changing and moving and growing and developing. So, you know, I like, if you like your character, and I think any writer, you have to like your character to do it, I think, and you really get into that character. And so as long as, I assume you feel the same about Rick, as long as people want to read Claire Carlson, I'll like Claire Carlson because I like her.
Right, absolutely. Well, the latest is Beyond the Headlines, came out, I think, in the last month, and at bookstores near you.
Yeah,
this month. Well, so what's how can people find you on the World Wide Web, or do you want them to?
And I should also point out that if you I mean, obviously I'd love to sell the hardcover, but it's also this Beyond the Headlines plus all three of the earlier books are like a Amazon Kindle monthly deal for the entire month of May, which means you got a couple more days you can get it for even, you know, like $1.99 or something. So, but you know, you really want to get the hardcover, obviously. I'm on the web on, my author name of rgbelsky.com. It's www.rgbelsky.com is my website. I try and keep that as relatively updated as I can. And I'm on Facebook as, both Dick Belsky and R.G. Belsky. So you can meet both of us on Facebook.
You have a choice. All right, Dick. Well, thanks a lot. Really enjoy talking to you, and good luck with the continuing tour.
Thanks, Brad. I hope we can all make it to one of the conferences or like VoucherCon and meet up in person this year.
I'll be there. I'll be at VoucherCon New Orleans in the heat.
Okay,
in the heat,
man.
Maybe. All right, buddy.
Man.
Take care.
Good talking to you. Thank you.
Thank you. If anyone out there would like to listen to me yammer on about my books, I'd love to talk to your book group. I just did actually a live book group, book club. I don't know what to call them, a group. Book club a couple weeks ago. We met in a park, and I got sunburned. Anyway, you can contact me through my website, mattcoylebooks.com, or you can find me on Novel Network. They can hook you up, and we can do a talk. I will be back in the next couple of weeks, and this is a copyrighted trademark podcast owned solely by the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. Thanks for listening in.